Welcome to The Theater Project. Today, The Theater Project is thinking about taking a deep dive into what it is to be a casting director. I'm your host, Mary Iannelli, and I sat down with Emma Green to discuss the role of the casting director and what up-and-coming actors should know about the whole casting process. We hope you enjoy. Emma, thank you for joining us. You studied law communications at Bonn University. How did that lead you to casting director? Was that what you had planned all along, or?
No, I think when you meet a lot of actors and they're like, I was interested in law, or I did law, and I find they kind of go hand in hand. I feel like we maybe watch too many law shows on TV and we're like, I want to stand up in a courtroom and perform, basically. So yeah, I studied law in Australia for a bit and realized quickly I never wanted to be a lawyer pushing a bunch of paper around, even though I still had an interest in the law. And I decided to start looking into acting, and that's what brought me over to the US.
Oh.
So basically, when I kind of touched feet on soil here, I sort of tapped into both casting to be behind the scenes and learn more about how acting works and the business side of it. But I ended up just staying behind the camera and enjoying the casting process more than anything else. So yeah, that's how that got me there.
That's interesting. What was your first job out of school? Was it on the casting side or the art side or the law side?
No, it was definitely on the art side. Yeah. Once I made the trip across the Pacific, I stuck to casting. Yeah. No more law for me.
And what is the difference between a casting director and a talent agent or a casting agent? Because I think people sometimes may confuse that, the two.
Yes, I get a lot of emails saying, can you represent me? And I'm like, not what casting does. So a casting director or a casting agent or a casting associate or a casting producer or a casting coordinator.
Anything with casting.
Anything with casting is the people that are usually hired by a producer or a production company to find talent for a particular film, TV show, podcast, print campaign, anything. So what we do is we basically, we talk to agents or we go onto casting websites like Casting Networks, Breakdown Services, and we put out briefs and we let them know what we're looking for, and then agents or people themselves submit for the jobs. So a talent agent difference is that they represent a group of clients. They talk to casting agents, they talk to producers, they talk to production companies to see what's cooking and what gigs are on that they can put their talent forward for.
Okay.
We don't represent any talent. We find talent all over the world, depending on the job.
And can you explain a little bit about how that works? Like, how do you find talent? Do you have a certain group of people that you know you work with usually, or do people contact you? You know, how does that kind of...
Yeah, so we have people that usually unsolicited would send us an email like, hey, have you got any projects I'd be suitable for? Here's my reel, here's my information. And whilst that's good of them to be proactive and reach out to casting agents, our briefs are usually so specific that if you send us a general email, even if you're perfect for something, it might not be for something for years from now, and we won't remember that one email. So the way it works is we would put out a brief and say, hey, talent, we're looking for a man of this age with this look who can ride a bike. And we're looking for a woman of this age who looks like this and, you know, has a child or something. And we kind of put that brief out there and people submit themselves if it's an open casting, or the agents will send us their recommendations of their actors. And then from there, we pick the ones we like, we ask them to do an audition, and we usually send that on to the client for review. Mm-hmm. And then the client will say, okay, actually, I like these people. Can you ask them for a callback tape, or can we do callbacks in person? And then from there, they book the talent. So, you know, on most campaigns that we do, if it's a commercial campaign, that's where we see the highest volume of talent submitting. They usually pay the most, and they're usually the broadest range of talent that we're looking for usually. And with films and TV shows, they get more specific and they tend to hone those you know, requirements quite specifically, and we get very picky, and we look at their reels and we look at their past auditions that they might have tapes of, and we really check the quality of their acting first before we even ask them for a callback tape.
Okay. So if an actor doesn't have an agent yet, because a lot of mm-hmm. the people who are listening to this may be like fresh out of college or new, where would they find these open casting briefs?
Yes. So starting kind of at the base level, Star Now is a website that people use kind of in Australia, the UK, a little bit starting here in the US. And that's where very new talent or very open casting calls get posted. Above that would be Backstage, where they also have open casting calls. And that can be anyone who's first-time producer, not a producer, they have their own project they're doing, all the way up to proper casting directors or studio casting directors will post on there as well. Then you get into casting networks, which is the one we use the most. It's the most user-friendly for the casting directors, and we have the largest pool of talent with that service, and people can submit themselves, and they pay a monthly membership fee to be part of that process, and then they pay to upload their photos and everything. But once you've done it once and you've paid to upload your photos and get yourself set up and everything like that, it definitely is worth it. When I was back in the day doing acting myself, that was where I'd go to find all of my auditions and upcoming castings, and you submit yourself.
Okay. And those were in the US as well?
Yeah. Casting Networks is US. Okay. So they also have their casting networks branching in the UK, Canada, Australia, Asia. They have other territories around the world as well. So they're just getting bigger and bigger with a print. So they are the preferred choice. And then you have Actors Access, which is very similar in that vein, but it's specific to the US. And then a sub part of Actors Access is Breakdown Services that is very much internal to producers and casting directors to submit name talent, celebrity talent, or those briefs are not normally launched publicly. People don't normally publicly submit for breakdowns.
Okay.
That comes from an agent. So Actors Access will sometimes release what's been put on a breakdown through Actors Access. So people can submit through the Actors Access portal. But if it's a pure breakdown, then it stays internal with agents and studios and producers. So that's how that kind of works. And then you've got some apps that I found to be really helpful when they first came out, which was Upcast. It's an app that allows you to submit through your phone, your iPad, or whatever you're using, but it also asks you to take photos like there and then in the moment when you're submitting. So for us, it's great because sometimes people's headshots do not look anything like what they look like in real
life.
Need a But if I have to get your submission, email you, ask for the selfie, get the selfie back, and then pitch you to my client, I've wasted a lot of time. Whereas in the Upcast app, they ask for it there and then, and you can upload it. Like, you don't have to pay extra to upload that selfie, which you would if you had to do it on Casting Networks.
Okay. When an actor, I'm probably jumping ahead of where I want it to be on this yet, but when an actor uploads, just find something that they think they're right for.
Mm-hmm.
What should they be including? Would you say like a current picture of themselves, a reel, you know, should the reel be focused? Like, will they know it's a comedy or it's a drama? Or are there any sides that they have to prepare or just something that they have in their pocket?
So let's say they submitted on Casting Networks, which is the main platform.
Okay.
That's process is very simple. They just click submit and then they walk away. So their profile that's already on Casting Networks gets sent to us. We have a look at their headshots. If they've got a resume on their casting profile, if they've got any reels on their profile, we can check them out if we need to. Generally, depending on most castings, you don't have time to go into each person's individual when you're getting hundreds of submissions. So what we always recommend 100% is if the casting call was for a woman who can ride a bike with her child, and we like, please send your submission in for that. If you're submitting even on Casting Networks or anything else, when you submit, most important thing I can tell anyone out there, add the notes. Just add the notes, because when I have 300 submissions for the same role and no one's left me any notes, I don't know if you fit the brief or not. I'm just looking at your headshot. So it helps me if I see someone that says, oh yeah, I'm a woman. Great. I can ride a bike. Great. Oh, I also have a kid. They can be in it too. They have a work permit or a Coogan. And so that's really helpful as well. So just always put notes with your submission if it's through casting networks, breakdowns, actors access, any of that, so that we know you've read the role, you fit the role, and you're telling us why you fit the role.
Okay, great.
Most actors fail to do that 98% of the time. And the 2% that give me notes are the ones that go straight to the top of my list because I understand that they've read the role, they're submitting specifically to it, and they know what I'm asking for.
Okay.
So therein tells me that they understand the business side of this and they're giving me what I need right away. Then I'll check their materials and whatever else they've got. If it's a submission where we give you an email and you can just send your stuff to an email, again, put the notes that you've read the role, you know what it is and how you fit it. Give me your sizes while you're there. Just may as well. You already have them. Just give that to me. Give me a regular photo, not a professional one. Give me a headshot. And then if you have any footage of you, either a reel or recent audition tapes or anything you can send me that shows what you look like as a real person, send that. To anyone that has not got a reel, does not have any recent audition tapes they can send or any footage they can send, there's nothing stopping you from putting the camera in front of your face and giving me a quick introduction. Hi, I'm blah, blah, blah. I live in such and such. I am this age. Here are my skills. And these are my hobbies. This is my introduction slate. Nice to meet you. And that way I go, oh, you took the effort. Even if you're a green actor and you have no experience, ever do that.
That makes a lot of sense. How do you prepare for, like, where somebody contacts you, Diane Foster, or, you know, some producer or director, how do you prepare for what you're looking for in your brief? Or does that come directly from the person hiring you?
You'd be surprised. A lot of times people come to me and they're like, we need casting. And I'm like, what do you need? And they're not really sure. So sometimes we get, let's say it's a script, film or TV. You have the script, the characters are in there. If the producer hasn't given you character breakdowns, I usually pull breakdowns. I read the script. I understand what they're looking for. And then we kind of go back and forth to figure out like physical characteristics that they need for the character. Sometimes they have to match a look. Sometimes they're open. We need to go through all of that. And then from there, I prepare the brief and I push those briefs out, casting networks, actors access, any of the places like that that they go. Or I contact agents and say, here's the project. I'm looking for this role specifically. Send me who you've got. I think when producers don't know what they're looking for, it makes it a little bit more difficult because then they come to me for advice like, hey, we have this commercial campaign. We need 10 people that can play football, and we need to film them in Minneapolis. So then it's up to me to figure out how to craft that brief, tell them what they're looking for and what they could expect, and then, you know, tailor my services to that which that they need.
Okay. And I know having cast some of my kids in shows when I've worked over the summer, some of it is just a gut feeling. You have that, I think this person can do this. Is that something, an innate talent that you as a casting director have to have? Or is that something that you can learn, that can be learned in case somebody wants to go into casting?
Yes. So I didn't roll out of bed and just become a casting director. Like I really had to learn a lot of these skills as I went along. I will say that you can judge a book by its cover, aka its headshot, quite quickly. And in casting, we have to. So sometimes I can look at a headshot and I can know if that person's physicality suits the role and if they're going to work. Where the reel or that introduction or what you write in your notes, how you communicate in your email, how all of that comes across instantaneously to me is how I know if I can trust we're going to have a good communication process and that will translate onto set. So if I've emailed you and asked you for materials or extra information and you send it in piecemeal or it's not well written or it's not clear in an email or you're not responding right away, And by right away, I mean, like, if you're on set, obviously you can't respond. And then you say, hey, I was on set today, and that's fine. But if you're not responsive in general, or your communication is off, then I'm like, I can't send you to set, because this is how you're going to be with production. That's how you're potentially going to be on set. Right. So we look for those cues in the communication we have with you right off the bat. As so far as tapes are concerned, same thing. If I'm just watching tapes, I know nothing else about you, and I see 10 tapes, I can usually tell the person right away who I want to book for the job based on how they come across in the tape, regardless of their performance. So
okay. And you learned all of this on the job? There's not a course in Casting Director 101. Anywhere.
No, there is no Casting Director 101, unfortunately. And I think, I don't know why there isn't, because I think it would be very helpful if people did go to school to learn all of these skills. But it also depends what field you go into. So everything I have learned, I've learned on the job. And I started with interning in Australia at the Warner Brothers casting studio. So I offered my time for that for quite some time. When I came to the US, I worked for Fremantle Media for a long time as an intern as well. So unfortunately, there's an element of paying your dues that comes with mm-hmm. this, but it's cheaper than going to college. So I still say, if you can give some of your free time, I would do it, because that's how you learn. You only learn by seeing other casting directors do and what they select and how they operate. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially how it happens. And each job you learn something new, what not to do, what to do, different kinds of producers. But depending on your field is where it all changes. If you want to go to film and TV, you're going to be a very different casting director than if you went into reality TV or nonfiction, or, as we also call in the trade, factual. So if you're a factual casting associate producer or a casting director, you're going to have a very different casting approach and style to film and TV casting directors.
Okay. Once you've cast somebody, do you, and you know they did a good job, do you kind of keep them? I know you have probably hundreds of people you deal with a week, but mm-hmm. do you kind of go back sometimes and say, oh, I remember she was really good at this, or the company liked her and all?
Yeah, so we do. I think in the world of hosts, if there's any hosts out there listening as well, that's very synonymous with return clientele. Once you're a good host and they know that that's your style and your brand, you will continuously be called, no doubt.
Okay.
TV is so very specific to the role. But if you're an actor that I know gives their all and they really are versatile and they're great on set, they're malleable, they're willing to just jump in and go for it, then I'm always going to try and push you, even if you might fall outside the scope of the character I'm looking for. I still will always try and push you. We can't remember a lot of people in that space, but we'll be like, hey, do you remember that guy from like 3 years ago? What project was that? Like, we'll have to go back through things and find you. But if you make an impression, we definitely do remember and we do recall.
Okay, great. When you've identified at that first stage that you look at their reel and they audition, are they auditioning with you before they go directly to the production company or the director?
Yeah, in this post-COVID landscape, and I was doing it before then and kind of promoting it, in the world of self-tapes now, it's very much send me your first tape, I might give you some notes, and then I might need a callback tape once the client has had a look.
Okay.
So that's quite a lot, and that is usually the process. If we have to do an in-studio session where we bring you in for an audition, they work with me, we do the scene, and then that's pretty much it.
Okay.
There are some big national commercials that are done what I call the old school way. They bring you in, there's hundreds of people in the room, you do your audition, you go away, 2 days later they ask you to come back and do it again, and it's for callbacks. But that's really not the norm anymore. It's just we can give the opportunity to see way more talent in less time when we have self-tapes.
Okay.
So whilst some people are a little concerned that they're not being called into a studio working directly with a casting director, I find that when you're not being swayed by my direction, because my direction could be different to what a director wants, mm-hmm. could be different to what a producers are looking for. So part of the skill of a casting director is to deliver a very neutral direction approach when you're directing talent. But with an audition self-tape, people can be themselves. We can see the proper version of what you're pushing forward as what you're selling, basically, in the tape without our interference. And then we can do callbacks for any additional directions or notes.
Okay. When you've gone through the recording, if somebody does need to come in for a live audition, who pays for that? Is that on the actor's part, or is that something that the production company would pay for if they were that interested?
Oh, yeah. If we needed to do in-person casting sessions, the production company would need to pay me to run the session, book the space, schedule the actors, deal with all those communications and actually run the sessions. So I would prepare a bid for them or an estimate and they would have to approve it. And then we would book the space and then book the actors and bring them in. Actors never should pay to attend an audition. The only time that they would pay to submit castings is with some casting websites. It's like a membership thing. You pay either a monthly fee or you pay to submit per audition. I think Casting Frontier used to be like that. It was like $2 or $3 to submit for each job you wanted to submit for. But insofar as auditions are concerned, you should never be paying for an audition.
Good to know. And when they do develop their reels, how important is the lighting and the sound? Should they pay attention to those things? I know everybody's got an iPhone now, but you know, you don't want it to look so dark, I would think, that you can't tell what's going on, or to have this somebody screaming or a dog barking in the background.
If you're planning on filming your own content for a reel, like where you're making it all up, basically, like it wasn't from things you've already filmed or projects you've already worked on, if you've got nothing to go with and you're just creating scenes, filming scenes and using them for your reel, yes, you have to approach it like a proper production as best you can and with what budget you can do. If you don't have the budget, tools, facilities to create good quality lighting, sound, video capture, you need to align yourself with a group of people that also maybe need to do reels. So you can all chip in and hire someone who can help you, or start networking. Offer your services to work on a short film someone's doing if they're willing to give you 3 hours of time to capture a scene with their camera if they know what they're doing. So like try and trade as much as you can if you can't afford to have someone just produce an expensive reel for you, which no one can when they start out. And I don't recommend doing that either. If you go for high quality, crazy expensive first reel package when you're a new actor, I guarantee your performances are not going to be as strong as they would be after a year, two, three of training and more experience. Even spending a lot of money on your reel at the beginning, especially in this era of iPhones and good Android phones, you can capture some nice moments and some nice reels, audition tapes yourself.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking. A lot of people have ring lights now. And
yeah. If you've ever seen Instagram and someone's doing their makeup, they have great lighting, great sound, video, like just do that.
And if they're putting together a reel for a specific part, how do you feel about costumes or them doing multiple takes?
Yeah.
Of a reading a side or something like that.
Really asked about the multiple takes. If you do multiple takes and they're so different each take that you feel compelled to send me multiple takes if I haven't asked for them, please put them in one link. One link, one video. I cannot express to you how many times I've received 8-10 different takes of the same thing and there's no variance, but in their mind, they've thought there's a variance and I'm like, it's not varied enough. So please put everything in one link unless you're asked to send them separately, like a slate, scene one, scene two. So if you're not sure, ask the casting director, hey, do you want this all in one link? But yeah, we don't have time to go through all that. But I think when they're sending their reels and tapes, I have had people film in their car and they've booked a job. I've had people with their kids screaming in the background, but that was for a job that had kids in it, so that was okay. And what that told me is that person can still be professional even when children are screaming in their face, so they'll probably be able to handle anything that someone can throw them on set. If it's a really important scene, a dramatic scene, or like if it's something that would never take place in a car, don't film in a car. If it's something that requires you to hold a gun, for instance, a lot of people tend to get very bravado confident when they start holding a holding a gun in their scene. So I think it's really important to be mindful that you don't want the prop to overtake your scene.
Okay.
But at the same time, you want to still use it if it's there. So if the scene says you're eating a hamburger, I do not want to see 30 seconds, 1 minute of the actual eating of the hamburger. I want you to still have that conversation you'd have in the scene as normal, but have the hamburger there. You can hold it. You can do something with it. But the actual you chewing and consuming of the hamburger is not important to me in the scene, and it's just distracting.
Okay.
And then sometimes, you know, if it's a particular costume, for instance, some people tend to be very obsessed with how perfect the costume is for what you need. So if it's a period piece, for instance, for the 50s, just don't wear something that looks like it came from Forever 21 today. Like, it's not going to match that tone. If it's a business situation, put a jacket on. If it's swimwear, for instance, now that's a different one completely. So sometimes for swimwear, the client will ask, especially in commercials. So we need to see that, but you're welcome to always tape with your swimwear. Do a slate, show us your swimwear, show us that you actually are comfortable in swimwear. But if the scene doesn't dictate that you're wearing swimwear exactly and mm-hmm. you feel more comfortable just to put a cover up on or a shirt, that's also fine. As long as we've seen like a footage or photo of what you look like in the swimwear. So that's just where it's like a comfortability. If someone says the scene is in lingerie, for instance, just a little call out to people when they're asked to do this in an audition or a callback, you could be asked like, hey, this role does involve nudity. I recommend you consulting with an agent in that process, depending on what they need. Sometimes they need to see what you look like, but you're ever standing naked in an audition room for anything, ever. And that includes lingerie and swimwear. If you're not comfortable, just say, hey, at this stage, I'm not comfortable with that, but here is a picture of me in a swimsuit. Or if you have, like, ladies, a sports bra and, like, tight shorts, like, you know, workout shorts or something, well, we can see what your body looks like without you having to reveal everything to us.
Right.
Just be very mindful when asking for props or costumes. And if you don't feel comfortable with something, you can ask, hey, just wondering, like, is it necessary for me to be standing there in my swimsuit the whole time or something like that? You don't want to come across as difficult, because that would be how we then translate you'll be on set. But you definitely want to protect your own rights and privacy and your comfortability.
Mm-hmm. And you keep mentioning a slate. What is a slate?
Oh, sure. So a slate at the front of an audition is usually when the actor will stand, if they're in the room or on their audition tape, and they'll say, hi, I'm such and such. I am this years old. My height is this. My weight is this. And then what you do is you turn from side to side and the back. So they turn to the side, and that's called your profiles, turn to the other side, and then you turn to the back or you do a turn around. And I will say that many, many years ago when I was acting, there was a commercial casting director that I took a class with, and she gave the best advice for slates ever. And it's very important, because so many times people will just stare as if they're in the lockup at the police station waiting for their photo to be taken. And then they'll turn to the side again, like they're, you know, in the lineup. And then they'll just sort of stand there and do nothing. Your slate is one of the most important things you can do to communicate who you are and your vibe and tone without having to say any words. And within 2 seconds, I have dismissed actors based on their slates. So I cannot express to you how important it is to take that moment to engage with the camera. This is the first time you're meeting me, even though you may be doing an audition tape. Hi, I'm such and such. I'm easy to get along with. I'm happy to be here. This is a fun experience. Fantastic. Here's my size. Have a little look. Turn to the side. Like, make it more fluid. Make it more like you're not in a police lineup.
Okay, that makes sense. Do you get involved with SAG or Equity? And I would assume that that's indicated in the brief that it has to be, or if they're getting credit or hours or whatever.
When we brief out, it'll say if it's non-union or SAG or open to both. It'll usually say the rate. If there isn't a rate there, but it says paid to be confirmed, it means literally that we don't have confirmation on it, but we know you're going to get paid something. If it's a low-paying job or like, hey, it's a $50 for a day student film situation, we want to make that as upfront clear as possible. because if people are taking time out from their work or their day and they're not getting paid very much, they need to know about that right away. If it's like a celebrity call or a name talent call, we may not put the rate on there because if people see a rate of $100,000 for someone to star in a movie or $1 million, then everyone's going to submit and it will be an absolute waste of time because we needed a celebrity or something. So in those situations, it's not listed. But we tell them what we need and if they need to be part of the union or not. In this world of digital media influencers, we're finding a lot more non-union work because they need real people, real influencers, social media, and a lot of those jobs don't fall under SAG jurisdiction or they can operate outside of that. So, yeah, just very important to note that if you're an influencer and an actor, non-union seems to be the majority of the work.
I had come across when I was researching this, a saying, you can't get an agent or a manager until you don't need one. At some point in this process, is it important for somebody to have representation or can they usually go through the process successfully on their own if they're careful? Like you said, don't ever pay to audition for something. You know, are there any things like that that they should know of, or at what point do they need representation?
That's a really great saying, and it is kind of true. When you first start, you're so desperate for representation so they can get you into the rooms you need to be in and in front of the people you need to see, but they're not willing to take you because you don't have any experience. But then once you've got the experience, you're like, do I really need the agent? The answer to that is yes, but you still need to be doing 90% of the work. So I would say if you have booked a TV show or a national commercial and you do not have an agent, that's a very fabulous time to call some of the agents you might have already reached out to before or that you're interested in and go, hey, they've asked me to book this role. I don't have representation. I think I need guidance. And in that situation, they might be inclined to take you because you're about to make the money.
Right.
So that's a little tip there. I think if you get to the point where you're booking a decent amount of projects, and especially if you become SAG, having an agent's very helpful. It keeps production companies kind of on the straight and narrow. They can usually negotiate a higher rate. But again, I think you need to be accessible yourself and know when to just refer it to your agent. So you should still be looking for the jobs yourself. You should still be pitching yourself. You should still be communicating with casting directors, producers, and all of that, and then looping in your agent. So that's the best way for you to be popular with your agent and for you to make sure that they see that you're working hard and you've done all the hard work for them. And it makes you look like very proactive. But if you're new to acting, I wouldn't even bother looking for an agent until you've got quite a bit of material on your reel. So get out there, do student films, do as many free projects as your budget and your time will allow you to do without being exploited. Don't sit there and do 5 days of work for 12-hour days and get nothing for a student film. Collaborate with other people, work together. Just get as much material under your belt and as much training under your belt as you can, because agents will not look at you unless you have any of that. You need to give them something to sell. And the only way they can sell you is with a reel and your information showing your training and then your skills. If you don't have a lot of like acting skills or training as such, but maybe you were a fireman or maybe you're a carpenter or you know how to ride horses, start filming that stuff too. We need that on your reels a lot. So if you have any of that, do it. If you want to put some character pictures on your profiles with casting networks, whatever you can afford to do, do those too. They don't have to be professional. We just have to see you. Like I said, if you're a fireman, give us a picture of you as a fireman. If you are a horse rider, give us a picture of you horse riding. You know how to play golf, same thing. Yoga, same thing. I don't know how many times we cast for yoga people and they're like, yeah, I know how to do yoga. And I'm like, cool, where's your reel? I need to see you doing yoga. In this day and age, everyone has a phone. So just capture yourself doing the things you say, your skills, and that will build your reel as well.
Yes, and I think touching a little bit on what you said about just do whatever you can where time and money permits. Because from people that I've met, Broadway mostly, because I'm out here on the East, a lot of those roles they've gotten on Broadway are because they worked with somebody in a regional theater in Milwaukee for a couple of weeks. And So you've got to be nice and ready for everybody you come into contact with, and you never know where that's going to lead. So
definitely. I mean, this industry is completely about networking. To anyone who's ever tried to sell a script or pitch a show, they go nowhere until you know someone who can just connect you with the right people. It's the same with acting. And a lot of times you will see people will get a role because they are neighbors with the producer who's doing a show of something, or they're someone's new boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever that may be. So the networking can never be underestimated. Networking, where it shows your work ethic, like you said, working in a theater, proving that you are a team player, you're good to work with, that will keep you in the industry longer than all the other ones I just mentioned. That will keep you on people's speed dial. So even if you have no interest in sound or camera or gripping or art department or producing or any of those areas, throw your hat in the ring to help out wherever you can, because then it shows that you're versatile. And even if it's not a job that's like the thing you're doing, people go, I worked with such and such. They were doing props on that one, but I know they can help us build these sets, or I know they can help us with talent wrangling, or I know they can help us with producing or whatever. So it's good to be as versatile as you can be and be helpful, be professional. We're not going to all get along, otherwise, like, that's a utopian belief. You're going to have artistic differences with people and personality clashes. That happens all the time. But the best thing you can do is just turn up, be professional, do your job. And one piece of advice I would say is never overstep. Never overstep your place. So I know when people are doing background stand-in work, they're at the bottom of the totem pole and actors feel very despondent with doing that work. We all did it. We did it extensively, paying bills, just getting experience, being on set. But still persist, be professional and be helpful, and never like overstep your mark where you think you can just walk up and talk to A-list talent that might be on set or the high-end director. If that director comes and stands next to you and talks to you, you can say, oh, yeah, hi, great, nice to meet you, moving on. Don't then say, oh, hey, I'd love to work on your next project, or just be mindful, read the room, especially with celebrity or high-end crew talent. You want to be the person that is there, available, professional, courteous, but doesn't overstep. I mean, I had a situation where a stand-in talent at the end of their day was like, cool, can I get tickets to the premiere? And I was like, no, not your place, considering the people that are like grips or art department don't get those tickets. So you've been here for half a day standing in. It's not your space to ask for that. So be respectful of where your place is. Know your value. Always know your value and be respected and treat others with respect. But just don't overstep, because that'll get you kicked off a set really fast.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that we haven't covered that I missed that we should have?
I don't think so. My most important thing was please leave notes when you submit. I think from a casting director's point of view, if more actors were able to take casting workshops, I know they're kind of like a faux pas now. They kind of went away a while back. But if you can take classes or any online seminars or talks or podcasts with casting directors, do it. Even better, intern your time at a casting director's office if you genuinely want to be a successful actor. And you will see the workings of how these things start and finish, who gets picked, who doesn't, and why, and you will learn a lot more, a lot faster. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely recommend anyone in front of the camera spends a little bit of time in the casting process.
Okay, great. Thanks again for your time, Emma.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Theater Project Thinks About. Our audio engineer was Gary Glore, and our theme music was by Gail Liu and Damian DeSandis. Visit thetheaterproject.org to sign up for our mailing list, as well as check out all the links and resources in the show notes. And if you enjoyed what you heard, please consider leaving a comment on our Facebook or Instagram page. That's all for this episode. We'll see you next time.